We're dipping in on some epidemiology 101, if you will, here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. There is a bounty of public health data flowing from federal and state sources on the COVID-19 pandemic, but a lack of federal standards has led to confusion over how to interpret the data sets and how to make apples-to-apples comparisons. What data can you trust? How closely do you monitor the day-to-day changes? Do you follow Wisconsin's Department of Health Services data or Johns Hopkins Resource Center? What about your college or university's data dashboard? What confuses you about the metrics you see? We're at 800-642-1234. Will Cushman is associate editor of WisconText. That's a collaborative reporting project of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin. Will, welcome back.
Good morning, Kate. Thanks for having me.
So it is. There is this dizzying amount of data released every day, and it's really difficult to understand what metrics to pay attention to. Can you explain how government data is corralled and then published each day?
Sure. Yeah, there really is a lot of data, and you're right. It's hard to keep track of, and it's hard to know what exactly to focus on. But in Wisconsin, the data that most of us are looking at, either on the Department of Health Services website or on local health department websites, is mostly being funneled through the Wisconsin Electronic Disease Surveillance System, which is an online database that's been around, I believe, since the 90s. And that's where healthcare providers who provide testing for COVID-19, as well as labs who actually do the testing on behalf of healthcare providers and the community testing sites, et cetera, that's where they upload information about both negative and positive test results. And then that gets funneled out through the system to the State Department of Health Services and then local health departments where the test results are.
There's been criticism that this is old, clunky technology, and that is one of the issues here. Has that presented some limitations?
Yeah, I talked to a few local health officers who said that it's the electronic disease surveillance system has been a bit of a challenge to work with in terms of the coronavirus and COVID-19, mostly just because of the huge volume in testing that's occurring right now. It's a system that was built to help with surveillance of kind of local foodborne illness outbreaks or rarer diseases, diseases like HIV/AIDS. And tuberculosis. It wasn't really necessarily built to handle thousands and thousands of test results coming in every day, especially the thousands that are coming into specific jurisdictions in some places like Milwaukee and Dane County, and actually like a growing number of jurisdictions now. And yeah, I spoke to the former health commissioner now of the city of Milwaukee, Jeanette Kowalik, and she described the system as archaic and really quite frustrating sometimes. And I also spoke to Kirsten Johnson. She's a health officer for Washington Ozaukee Public Health Department. It's a combined public health department for Washington County and Ozaukee County. And she said that her department has also struggled with the system, particularly with tallying negative test results. So it seems like everyone really wants that tallying to be quicker, to be more automated, but right now, the folks at local health departments have to, they call it closing out. They have to manually close out each negative test result before they can report it. And that's a time-consuming process, especially when there are sometimes thousands of test results to comb through every single day.
Oh, goodness. That would be very labor-intensive to go through each and every one.
Totally. Yep. And they can't report those negative results until they do all of that. And that has actually led to backlogs in reporting negative test results in some jurisdictions, including Dane County back in July. People may remember seeing that in the news, that there is a backlog of negative test results in Dane County that were not only affecting the reporting of negative test results, but then also affecting the county's test positivity results. And we know that test positivity is another one of those calculated metrics that people are following closely to kind of assess the virus's spread and the safety of of all manner of activities, including reopening schools.
Yeah, everything's so interconnected. We're talking with Will Cushman of WisconText, and we're discussing how to interpret metrics on COVID-19, make sense of the daily numbers. Taking your questions as well, where do you get your information about the coronavirus? What dashboards are you watching? And what information do you trust? What's most helpful to you? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Will, public health departments are releasing daily data, and so this is like near real time. Is that unusual?
It is, yeah. It's really, in the words of Dr. Ryan Westergaard, the state epidemiologist for communicable diseases, unprecedented in public health. He said at really any level to be releasing this type of data, so case reports and negative test results, on, as you said, a near real-time basis, on a daily basis. Typically, this type of reporting happens more at like a monthly or an annual basis for most diseases. During the flu season, we'll get influenza reports on a weekly basis. Mm. But yeah, this daily test reporting and case reporting is really quite unprecedented, at least in U.S. public health. And that might be part of why we sometimes see discrepancies between agencies who are, as I think you and I have talked about previously, releasing data at different times of day, getting their data at different times of day. It can be messy for the casual observer to try to wade through.
Do we need daily data updates?
That's a really, really good question, especially when public health officials are reminding people that really the best way to kind of get a grasp on the pandemic is looking at those longer term trends. So 7-day averages of new cases or trends like that. But those trends are built on daily data. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of hard to withhold that daily data, especially now at this point that public health departments, including all over Wisconsin, have made it a practice to report that data on a daily basis. I think it would be really difficult to backpedal from that practice at this point.
Well, let's look at some of the ways that we can get confused about the data. There's confusion around the number of tests versus the number of people tested. Can you help us understand that?
Yeah, for sure. So that's been a point of confusion lately in Wisconsin. So the Department of Health Services actually just updated a bunch of its data visualizations on its dashboard, for lack of a better word, on its website to help clarify the difference in especially total test results every day and then people who are tested. There is some confusion about test positivity rates, some rates being calculated based on only results attached to individuals versus test results, whether or not there are repeated test results for an individual. And this has become a little bit more of a confusing matter since about mid-June. That's when the number of people in Wisconsin, at least, receiving repeat tests really started to go up quite a bit.
Yeah. We are discussing how to make sense of the COVID-19 metrics with Will Cushman, Associate Editor of WisconText. So what data tracker do you follow? Is the data presented clearly to you, or do you find the metrics reliable? What confuses you about the data dashboards that are popping up all over? Join in with your questions on the COVID-19 pandemic data, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Will Cushman here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, it's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Since the start of the pandemic, public health officials have acknowledged COVID-19 data is not perfect, but it's critical to identifying trends in the pandemic. There may be corrections in state data that also cause confusion. Evaluating many metrics together can help us get a clear picture of what's going on, but it's all really tricky and interconnected. So where do you get your information about COVID-19? Join in at 800-642-1234. Will Cushman is associate editor of WisconText, and he stays with us. Will, one of the metrics that has also been really tricky to understand is the number of recovered people, the recovered individuals metric. How should we interpret that metric?
That's a really good question. And in fact, yeah, actually, public health officials here in Wisconsin say that they kind of wish that they had thought a little bit more about how to actually label that metric, recovered cases, because how they label it, or how they define a recovered case is really only based on whether or not a patient is deemed to be no longer infectious, not necessarily that all of their symptoms have resolved. And as we know now, going on 9-10 months into this pandemic, there are a number of COVID-19 patients called, they're known as COVID-19 long haulers.
Long haulers. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Who are experiencing symptoms for months after their initial infection, and definitely do not consider themselves recovered. And sometimes their doctors don't consider them recovered either. But in the public health data, if you were just to read the number of recovered versus active cases, you might have maybe a skewed understanding of how many people are truly recovered. That data reported by the state of Wisconsin is only about the number of people who are considered to no longer be infectious.
There's also data published on our state's testing capacity, test availability. What can we glean from that type of data?
That's a really good question. The testing capacity data, I think what's helpful there is especially now that the Department of Health Services dashboard has clarified and made it really clear with charts on their websites how many tests are happening each day. That test capacity data is important in relation to the number of tests that are being conducted every day, just to know how close we are across the state in hitting that threshold, that capacity.
So it's like showing us we have a ceiling and whether we're getting close to that ceiling or not.
Exactly. Yeah. There's a testing ceiling in the state that is constrained by all sorts of things, mostly by the testing materials, which are still in kind of short supply. And public health officials don't really want to go above 80% of that capacity in any one day. But they have exceeded that 80% sometimes. But yeah, that's a good metric to follow.
We're talking with Will Cushman, who's a journalist reporting on the pandemic for WisconText, and his new piece is called Wisconsin's Urgent, Imperfect, Transparent, Confusing, Essential COVID-19 data. What questions do you have about the data? Join in 800-642-1234. Well, just all of those descriptors in the title of your article, it made me kind of laugh and cry at the same time, because what is a person to do to really make sense of it all? I want to move one state over to Iowa, where a software glitch caused the government to publish wrong information about the number of cases. What happened there?
Yeah, that was a pretty, disconcerting situation for a little bit. So this was in the run-up to school restarting in Iowa in August, and restarting in-person instruction has been a top priority of the state government in Iowa. And right before schools were set to reopen a couple weeks before, this glitch was discovered in the state's data that accidentally assigned some new positive cases to old dates. So it made it appear like new case numbers appear lower than they actually were. And it also made the test positivity calculations lower than they were in reality. And test positivity was one of the key metrics that Iowa was using to assess the safety of reopening schools. And what happened there was, as we're seeing here in Wisconsin, more and more people getting tested repeatedly. What was happening is some people who had previously tested negative, but then tested positive subsequently, those positive test results were recorded for the date of their original negative test. So sometimes being backdated all the way back to almost the beginning of the pandemic and testing. And so it really kind of messed up numbers there for a little bit. But that's, yeah, and it was a wild situation.
It kind of reminds you that this data gathering is so sensitive. Let's bring in Tim now from Eau Claire. Hi, Tim, what's your question?
I've never really understood the purpose of the test positivity rate. I mean, if you're looking at 1,000 people got tested, 100 people came up with it, does it? I mean, yes, they're two. It's comparing apples and oranges. We have 1,000 people who got tested. That's great, but we have 100 people who tested positive for it. I guess I don't really see the purpose of pointing out how many people thought they had it but didn't have it. It kind of seems like everybody latches onto that one when there are other statistics that might be much better indicators of how we're actually doing.
And Tim, very briefly, what would be the other indicators that you would look to?
Maybe the increase of positive tests over the previous 7 days or the previous month, or you know how many active cases that we currently have, the percentage of community spread in an area, any number of things. But it's kind of like, does it really matter how many people got tested as long as everybody who wanted a test could get a test?
Tim, thank you so much. Will, what can you say about that test positivity rate and what Tim's describing there?
I think Tim is making a good point. And I think public health officials would say the same thing, that test positivity rate is not something that it's not the only thing you should be tracking for sure. And that there are definitely other metrics that you should be, if you're interested in tracking the pandemic, you should also be tracking. And Tim's correct. That would be new cases, 7 day averages of new cases. Now in Wisconsin, we're following closely new hospitalizations. As we know, some hospitals are nearing capacity for treating COVID-19 patients. But the test positivity metric, I think it's been a subject of focus partly because it can be so confusing and it's calculated in different ways. And so there are discrepancies in that metric sometimes. And so that can lead to quite a bit of attention, I guess.
Yeah.
But it can still be useful in if there's like a really high test positivity or if it's getting really high, it can be a sign that testing is not keeping up with the spread of the disease, and that testing ideally should be expanded if possible.
You just mentioned there the hospitalization data is increasingly important, number of people in ICUs, but how do hospitals report their data?
That's a really good question. And the hospitalization data that's reported by the Department of Health Services does not come through that electronic disease surveillance system. That does come from the hospitals and through the Wisconsin Hospital Association. So hospitals report that data directly to the federal authorities. And it's often associated with like Medicare reimbursement reporting, but not always. But it goes directly to federal authorities, and then what the Department of Health Services and what local public health officials departments are reporting comes via that way, not by the disease surveillance system.
Well, let's quickly get in Jeff in Door County. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, good morning, guys. I was interested in your guest's comments about false positives and false negatives. I am on my way right now to get an antibody test after being tested 3 times. The most recent one, the majority of people I work with tested positive, yet I tested negative. I'm my father's primary caregiver, and I cannot afford to give it to my aging father And I'm just curious about, because I've talked to several people where one spouse gets it and the other one doesn't. And it's kind of confusing. And I wonder if your guest can add any input to that.
Any input there on false positives, false negatives?
That's a really good question. I know that the PCR tests, those are the results that are reported by the state. Those tend to be pretty accurate. I guess if you were to have like a low amount of virus in your system, there's always a chance of a false negative. There's some other tests that are less reliable, the antigen testing, and then I believe a lot of antibody testings are also less reliable. But in terms of like one spouse getting the disease and another not, there's growing evidence that only some people, a small portion of people who are infected, are spreading the vast majority of the disease.
Will, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Kate.
Will Cushman, Associate Editor of WisconText, and you can find his story, more reporting at wisconText.org. Coming up 32 days before the general election, do you know where your ballot is? Are you confused about voting? We have clerks to answer your questions on voting right after this news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're covering the nuts and bolts of voting in the general election here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The latest published tally from the Wisconsin Elections Commission, 1.2 million people have requested absentee ballots. If you're voting by mail, do you understand the witness requirement? What information do you need about registering? Do you have questions about voter ID? Your questions front and center here, 800-642-1234. Ginny Dinkmeyer is the La Crosse County Clerk. She's held the position since 2011. Ginny, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you.
And Wendy Helgeson is here, president of the Wisconsin Municipal Clerks Association. She's the town clerk for the town of Greenville. Wendy, welcome to you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, Wendy, let's start at the beginning. What options are there for people at this moment who need to register to vote?
People can go to the municipal clerk's office and ask for a voter registration application. They would need to provide proof of residency, or they can visit the My Vote Wisconsin website and they can register to vote online there. They would also need to provide a proof of residency.
And what types of proof of residency are good?
Well, the one most commonly used is a Wisconsin driver's license. They can use a utility bill, such as a We Energies bill, a water bill. They can use a bank or credit card statement or a paycheck or pay stub. There's a complete list of the documents that can be used on the back of the voter registration application.
And how do you check the status of your registration, the status of your voting and your ballot?
You can do one of two things. One, you can contact, again, your municipal clerk and ask to make sure that you're registered. I do receive plenty of those phone calls. But, again, you can also use that My Vote Wisconsin website. Our office in particular has seen a large uptick of voter registration through the My Vote website, which is great because the voter themselves is able to enter the information right online to ensure accuracy.
And it more functions like a clearinghouse in a way.
Correct. Yep.
Well, Ginny, you know, Wisconsin voter ID law requires photo ID to register. How do those registering online satisfy that requirement?
Well, when they're registering online, they have the option if their driver's license with the DMV matches their address. So if you recently moved but haven't updated your driver's license, a lot of times the DMV doesn't send you a new license right away, but your address with the DMV is updated. That will send, when you register, that will send a note to the DMV. They compare that addresses. If it matches up, then you're able to register through the MyVote website.
And Ginny, you know, for people who want to vote absentee by mail, how do they request a ballot?
They can contact their municipal clerks. They can fill out an absentee ballot request form. We know the Wisconsin Election Commission did that huge mailing. It was like, I believe it was like 2 million pieces back in June. So any registered voter who currently didn't have an absentee application on form would have got that absentee application. form in the mail. So they can fill that out, mail it to the municipal clerk. They can email the municipal clerk. And right now we're doing a big push, like as Wendy mentioned, getting onto the MyVote website, requesting your absentee ballot right up on there. It'll walk you through the process. It'll make sure everything's filled out if you have a photo ID that's required. So that's going to be the easiest method to do it.
Wendy, how long after that request is made, how long does it take to get a ballot in the mail?
Oh, we are statutorily required to get that ballot out within 24 hours. So I've had people I talk to on the phone that are walking through that MyVote website, and I'm assisting them doing that process. And then immediately after they hit submit, like I'll get that email and I'll confirm with them. And then we work to get that out. But we do need to turn them around within 24 hours.
How much time are you spending on the phone here? I mean, how many questions are you fielding from people about voting?
I work on elections. I work 9-hour days here. I work on elections most of my day every day.
Yeah, yeah. Ginny, what about you? What are you seeing in terms of people asking questions, contacting you, the clerk's office?
Yeah, we are. I think a lot of people look at the county clerks as like the central location for, you know, voting in their counties. And we're getting a lot of emails and a lot of calls, and we're trying to answer those information, the questions that are coming in the best we can. A lot of time it's regarding their absentee ballot, so then we're forwarding them on to the appropriate municipal clerk who can answer the questions regarding the absentee ballots.
Yeah. Do you find that there is an influx of information people want to get right now? Are you able to keep up?
We are. You know, we have a good rapport here in La Crosse County with the local media. So when something comes down, you know, a lot of times something at the national level is reported, but which may be true in some states, but not here in Wisconsin. You know, the local media is immediately reaching out to me. I'm setting up interviews, doing press releases, saying, hey, this is not true for here in La Crosse County or the state of Wisconsin. So we're getting as much information as we can get out there, you know, and we're working with our local media to make sure that the public has accurate information so that they can vote and make sure their vote's counted.
We're talking with Ginny Dankmeyer, who is the La Crosse County Clerk, and Wendy Helgeson, who's the Greenville Town Clerk. We're taking your vote questions, your ballot questions, as we experience this unprecedented election. With COVID-19, how do you plan to vote? Will you be voting by mail or early or in person on Election Day? What's your plan? What questions do you have about each option? We're at 800-642-1234. When voting absentee, you need a witness. And for those voting by mail, what do they need to know to do this successfully, this witness?
Well, it's very important that when the voter receives the absentee ballot in the mail, that they read through the uniform voting instructions that are included in there. The Wisconsin Elections Commission recently redid the voting instructions, had some like pictorial cues on there as well to help the voter complete that. I personally, in our municipality, have seen a huge influx of absentee ballots coming back without that witness address on it. And that is so very important. We cannot count the ballot if we do not have the voter signature and date, the witness signature and date, and then their address, including the city and state. We personally, because it's so early, have the opportunity to get that ballot back to the voter in order to complete that. I've completed a form letter that says, you know, you're missing voter signature in the envelope, you're missing witness signature or the address, so that they in turn have the opportunity to get that back to us. So some municipalities have, including mine, have highlighted yellow sections on the front of that envelope that highlight those three very important parts on the front of that certificate envelope. And so make sure that you're reading through the instructions, checking the highlighted areas, checking for those three main components before you return that to your clerk. Because as time goes on and in-person voting continues, you know, that time to like personally reach out gets, you know, a little bit less, but we will do everything in our power to reach back out to you to make sure that your vote counts. So we include those instructions. Please, please, please read them and complete that. If you have any questions, you should certainly reach out to your municipal clerk.
Well, let's take a call now. Mary Kay is joining us from Plover. Hi, Mary Kay. What's your situation?
I have already voted with my absentee ballot. I've worked with my municipal clerk. But when I initially tried to request the absentee ballot, my information was not in the MyVote Wisconsin.gov site. And I'm wondering how I would go about updating my information on that site. You know, I was registered. My clerk had the information, but it's just not on the website.
Jenny, can you jump in here?
Yeah, the MyVote website, if you're not entering your information, so, you know, if you had a middle initial or if you have a shortened name or if you're not just entering your birth date, your information exactly how it is with the voter registration, it likely is not going to bring up your name. So it's very likely you were registered, but if you weren't entering that information exactly on how we have it registered, we've noticed that MyVote will not find your registration. So, we're also finding that some people had that have registered many years ago that we're finding their birth dates have been incorrect. So it's likely just an entry error when the voter registration was entered. So your municipal clerk should have been able to look that up and tell you what was wrong and why it wasn't being brought up on the MyVote website.
And so as long as that clerk has Mary Kay's information correct, even though it's glitchy on the MyVote site, everything should be okay?
Yep, the clerk will have record of her being registered to vote, okay. So everything will be fine, and then she can proceed right like from there.
Great. Dave now in Milwaukee. Hi, Dave.
Yes, hello. Can you hear me?
We sure can. Go ahead.
Okay, I received my ballot in the mail after requesting it, and it said part of the instructions say that my ballot may not be counted if it doesn't have initials. And there is no place on my ballot where there are any initials. And I was just wondering when those initials get put on, after I mail it back, or do I need to go and get them initialed, or what?
Yeah, great question. Wendy, what about those initials?
On your ballot, it should be, there's a section on the lower right-hand side, depending how many offices or questions are on your ballot or on the back. There's a box, and it would say absentee ballot issued by, and that's where the set of initials are. So if you do not see those set of initials, I would contact your municipal clerk and make arrangements to get those initials added to your ballot.
And I found the initials on the back of the ballot. The front was full, of, and then I turned it over, and those initials were in a box on the back, Dave.
Okay, and the initials aren't necessarily handwritten. It's probably just stamped on there.
Wendy?
It may be. I physically use a wet signature and initial mine on there. So make sure that in that box, and if you have any questions or if you're uncertain at all, the best thing to do before completing that ballot and sending it back is to definitely contact your municipal clerk.
Dave, thank you for the question. Yeah, we have two Wisconsin clerks fielding all your questions about voting how-tos ahead of the November general election. Jenny Dankmeyer is the La Crosse County Clerk. Wendy Helgeson is the Greenville Town Clerk. Are you looking for ballot drop-off information? Are you tracking your ballot online? Would you like to know more about polling location, COVID-19 precautions? What concerns do you have about your ballot? Still time to ask. 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute. More conversation here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation about voting and election rules. Election Day, 32 days away. Important dates to bear in mind. Wendy Helgeson is president of the Wisconsin Municipal Clerks Association. Jenny Dankmeyer is here, the La Crosse County Clerk. And they stay with us for 10 more minutes. Let's bring in Joanne from Madison. Hi, Joanne. What's your question?
Hi. I would like your guests to clarify the documentation needed for voting and the documentation needed to register to vote. They are very different. In fact, there was a statement made earlier this morning that was not correct, and it wasn't clarified. And I'd also like your guests to clearly indicate the address that people can go to, myvote.wi.gov. That hasn't been mentioned yet. Thank you.
Joanne, thank you. Jenny, can you clarify there?
Can you need to
Yeah, go ahead.
They need to show acceptable photo ID. In most cases, that's going to be your Wisconsin-issued driver's license, a Wisconsin-issued photo ID, or even in some cases, a passport. When someone is registering to vote, they need to show proof of residency. Now, if your driver's license has your current physical address where you've been living for the past 28 days, that's acceptable. But a utility bill, a cell phone bill, there's many other items that would be acceptable as showing proof of residency. Your driver's license, if it doesn't have your current physical address when you're showing it to get your ballot as photo ID, that's not something we're looking at. We're just going to look at your photo, your name, and when did that photo ID expire. So, yes, it is very confusing on what's required for getting your ballot for as photo ID and then what's required when you're registering to vote as proof of residency.
Joanne, thanks. Let's bring in Kelly in Cascade. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I work in healthcare, and there's an initiative out of Massachusetts General Hospital. It's a nationwide initiative. Anyone working in healthcare can go to vote-er.org, and you can sign up. They'll send you a placard with a lanyard with a badge buddy, and it has right on there a little image that you can scan. Somebody can scan with their phone to see, like, a patient who's bedbound in a hospital or a nursing facility, or they're homebound and they can't get out. The healthcare worker can use that to just have their patient scan it with their own phone, look to see if they're registered. If they're not, they can go ahead and register to vote and identify how they would like to vote.
Kelly, thank you for bringing that tool up. Wendy, have you heard of this?
I have not heard of that. Here in Wisconsin, we do have procedures for hospitalized electors, but I have not heard of this initiative as of yet. It's very interesting.
Yeah. Jenny, how about you?
Yeah, this is the first time I'm here, but as well, you know, like Wendy said, there's a process here in Wisconsin for hospitalized electors to be able to cast a ballot, but I have not heard of this initiative as of yet.
Kelly, thanks so much for bringing that. Let's go to Jane now in Waterloo. Hi, Jane.
Hi. My son turns 18 the week before the election, less than a week before the election, and he was having a difficult time. It gave him issues with his date of birth for the voter registration online, and he would really like to vote. We would like to get him an absentee ballot. Can your guests comment on that or recommend something?
Jane, thanks. Jenny, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm going to defer this question to Wendy.
To Wendy.
I know she does
more
with the voting and the registration.
Perfect.
Is he wanting to vote in person, absentee? Or would he like his absentee ballot mailed?
I think he would like it mailed. At least we've already voted, and he was like, how can I get this done, Mom?
Okay. Well, unfortunately, the voter registration deadline to mail in your registration is October 14th. So, and you can register online. So his option would be for him to come into the clerk's office and register to vote after that time, since he won't be 18 prior to that. So we can't mail him a ballot prior to him turning 18. And the way Wisconsin law is written is that, you know, there are so many days out before the election that is considered, like, there's open registration, and then after that October 14th deadline, that's the close of registration. So after that time, all voters, regardless of age, are required to, if they wanted to register to vote, are required to come into the clerk's office to do so. So unfortunately, due to his birth date, there wouldn't be a way for him to register online and then receive an absentee ballot. So he could come into the clerk's office and register to vote, and then we still have that opportunity to mail him a ballot if he so chooses, but that registration option, he would need to come into our office to do that. We are able to mail ballots up until that Thursday before the election. So that date would be October 29th.
Sounds like a birthday outing there for Jane.
Yeah, you can make it a really fun event.
Jane, thanks. Let's go to Todd now in Tomahawk. Hi, Todd.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for the show. My question is I am voting by absentee ballot, and if my vote is disqualified, if my ballot would be disqualified for any reason, would I be contacted about that and have an opportunity to correct that? And additionally, would it work the same way if I was voting in person? If my ballot was, marked wrong for some reason, am I notified of that in any way?
Great questions, Todd. Ginny?
Yeah, so one of the things that happens when you vote absentee is you don't have the ability to put the ballot through the machine, which will alert you that you may have overvoted or, cross-voted, in an August election. So when you vote absentee, you kind of give up that right for you to be notified that if your ballot was not voted properly. The absentee ballots are all held secure until election day, where then they're opened and they're processed through the machine where they're tabulated. So if something is wrong with a ballot on election day, we wouldn't know who exactly that ballot belonged to because they're opened up in bulk because we're trying to preserve the secrecy of the ballot. So that's just one of those things. When you vote absentee, it's a great process, but yet if you do something wrong in your ballot, you won't have that opportunity to fix it on election day when it's being processed.
Wendy, anything else to add there?
No, I think she hit all of the points.
All right, let's go to Steve now in La Crosse. Steve, hi.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I received application in the mail automatically and sent that in the return envelope at the beginning of the month, and then didn't get anything back. And then I applied online a week ago and haven't received anything from that, and I wonder what the next step is.
Great. All right, Wendy?
Are you referring to the mailing that the Wisconsin Elections Commission had sent at the beginning of September?
Right.
Okay. Yep. I do have some voters as well. They have received a large volume. Every Wednesday, we do have a Q&A with the Elections Commission, and they are working through the requests for absentee ballots that they have received. So you have a couple of options. One, you could wait another week and see if that gets entered. But number two, what voters here in the town of Greenville have been doing are contacting me, and we're working with them to get them a ballot as well. If they don't want to wait, if they're really anxious and want that ballot now, you did indicate that you did go online and try to request that ballot. So the next step, I guess, for you would be, and what I would suggest, is for you to contact your municipal clerk. They have the opportunity to kind of go into the election or our state system and take a peek at your request for ballot.
Steve, thank you for the question. You know, Wendy, some mail that included absentee ballots was found near a road in Greenville. What is the latest on what the cause was and the status of those ballots?
We don't know the cause. Megan Wolf did a press conference yesterday. There was actually no Wisconsin ballot found in that mail.
Okay.
It was no Wisconsin mail at all. So Allegheny County Sheriff's Department did turn that over to the FBI and to work on that. But immediately upon finding out, I went down to the post office. We have a great relationship with our post office, and it's actually only a few blocks from our office. And I went down and asked them, and they said they assured them that it had nothing to do with our office. And turns out it wasn't even Wisconsin mail. So we've had zero issues with ballots reaching voters. And people were concerned, obviously, and rightfully so. And they contacted us to make sure that the ballot that they had mailed made it back to our office, and they have. So we're extremely thankful that it is not Wisconsin-related. The clerks here, the county clerks, the municipal clerks, and their staff work very hard to, with such integrity,
and
conduct elections. So
we're out of time. Thank you both so much, Wendy Helgeson, president of the Wisconsin Municipal Clerks Association, and Ginny Dinkmeyer on the Ideas Network.